Okay. Hi, everybody. So this will either be happy or sad. This is my last night. I have to go home. I have to go to work. And hopefully, Truly Das will feel up to it to be at these Q&As in the evening. But he'll be up to it if you guys be gentle with him during the day. Be very gentle. So he can have the energy, hopefully, to... And again, I really appreciate... and I think he appreciates you tolerating me. Honestly. Honestly, because it's really for... He asked me to do this and just to help him just have the rest. And he needs a lot of sleep lately. So I want to just pick up really briefly about the body scan technique we went over last night in subtle dullness. And this is important because I didn't want to create any anxiety around subtle dullness. In the sense that subtle dullness is okay up until a certain point. And actually, subtle dullness can be quite beneficial in your practice up until, you know, stage 3, stage 4. And then when you hit stage 5, then you work on subtle dullness. So I didn't want to leave you with the impression that you should always be vigilant for subtle dullness. The system, and it is a system, that Truly Das has laid out is very sequential. It's very linear, it's step by step. And if you think about it, you're always addressing something first, and then you can address the later issue afterwards. So for instance, the sequence is the mind produces a distraction, a subtle distraction. That subtle distraction becomes a gross distraction. That gross distraction captures your attention, causing you to forget the breath. Right, forgetting, and that forgetting leads to mind wandering. And so rather than addressing all of these issues, you go systematically first address mind wandering. You do the last thing first, then you address forgetting, then you address gross distraction, then you address dull, subtle distraction. Of course, it doesn't work out so linearly, as you all know right now. And then the same thing is true with dullness. There's subtle dullness, then there's progressive subtle dullness, and then there's strong dullness. So you always deal with the strong dullness in the early stages. Then you really get that progressive subtle dullness, the kind of subtle dullness that leads to the strong dullness. That's what you're working with. But the stable subtle dullness is actually quite helpful, especially in stages 3 and 4. If you find yourself in a state of subtle dullness, but you're stable on the object, it may not be super clear. That's okay, because there's very few distractions and you're very stable. Then if you trained your mind consistently in stable subtle dullness, that would be a problem. But only when you're at really stage 5 do you have to worry about that as a pressing issue. Someone actually, and this is something, I can't remember who it was, but they told me an antidote for the way they deal with dullness, especially in this hot room. They take their socks off. I thought it was interesting. So you can try that in terms of if that, yeah, okay. that's right, take your socks off. I thought. So that's the deal with subtle dullness. I just didn't want you to leave with this idea that subtle dullness is always a problem. Subtle distractions aren't always a problem. Subtle distractions are actually okay. It's only when you need to deal with subtle distractions later on in stage 6, when we were going through that pacification process, the quieting of the discriminating mind, that we worry about it. And for now, you leave the subtle distractions. You leave sounds. You leave thoughts. You leave, just let them be back there. You don't have to do anything with them. You don't have to worry about them. So the second thing I wanted to say about the practice, the body scanning practice, is you have to go at your own pace. And technically, it's a stage 5 practice. Because what you're doing in that, once you're out of subtle dullness in stage 5, you want to energize the mind more. That means you want to increase the power of your conscious awareness. Conscious awareness just consists of attention and awareness. And so the body scanning practice is to increase that energy. You don't have to go at the pace I went. I felt the clock ticking, and I realized we were, again, running out of time, which is always interesting, the kind of pressure that is. But so go at your own pace. If you wanted to do the body scan and just do your left hand the whole time, go for it. Okay? If you want to go quickly through the body, if you want to go slowly through the body, if you want to do big chunks, little chunks, you have to explore, you have to experiment, whatever is going to work for you. But the technique is always the same. Ground yourself in the abdomen. Right? Once you're stable here, pick a part of the body, look for any sensations you detect, and specifically pay attention to any breath-related sensations. And then just move that through your body. And then once you feel ready, you feel like your mind is somewhat energized, come back to the attention to the breath at the nose and sense if the quality of your attention and your awareness is alert, vibrant. Okay? So I just wanted to make those two caveats before I... about the practice, go at your own pace, explore the practice, use it if it's helpful, drop it if it's not. Okay. Do you suggest we keep a meditation journal, or is that too distracting? We'll be spending all our time in meditation thinking about what we'll write down. Well, this person already answered their own question. you know, it's up to you. Personally, I would, if I did keep a journal, it wouldn't be like, dear diary, today we had such good vegan bread or whatever, gluten-free bread. And the service here is so nice. But that one person in the room, you know, you don't want to get into that kind of detail and discursive mind. But I have found in long retreats, jotting down a few notes about my meditations is helpful. You know, insights that really are like hit you. And sometimes it relaxes the mind just to scribble them down, and then you can just put them away later. So it's really up to you. And this is the advice I've gotten from Chula Dasa. I definitely wouldn't spend a lot of time writing. Because in some ways, the discriminating mind, the thinking mind, is the mind we're trying to, in a sense, quiet, pacify. So that activity does stimulate that mind again. But again, simultaneously, it's been useful to me to just write down some notes on long retreats. So, yeah.
I'm thinking perhaps the person needs also in general, as part of practice, to keep our ongoing practice, perhaps they asked me.
Yeah, sure. I don't do it, and I'm sure it's fine. Whatever works.
Like in terms of knowing which stage you're at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, actually that's a good idea. That's a good idea, because you're always, in the stages, you're always looking for averages, right? We're not looking for the one meditation that was absolutely stellar. We're not looking for the one meditation that was just miserable. We're looking, on average, how's my attention? Is it fairly stable? And that might be a really good way in your daily life to be like, okay, what's my average? Because we often lose track, especially when things go poorly in meditation. We tend to get very self-critical. But if you can look back in your journal and be like, oh, okay, this is just a bump in the road. So it's a good idea. Give it a shot. Okay. Do you have any tips for when the part of the mind that's like an apathetic teenager who just wants to say whatever shows up? Sometimes it can feel quite aggravating. And that, this is in quotes, apathetic teenager who just wants to say whatever, and a big exclamation point. yeah, I have some advice. I don't have children, though, so I don't know if I should give this advice. But sometimes it can feel quite aggravating. Yeah. I think the I won't call it a mantra, but the saying that is going to be repeated over and over and over, that I have learned from Chula Dasa. Whenever you are facing a apathetic teenager, or a, for me, grumpy old man, or any other part of the many sub-minds of your personality, of your being, the mantra is very simple. It's, acknowledge, allow, and accept. When that apathetic teenager comes up, acknowledge it. Don't try to push it down. Allow that apathetic teenager to be there. Don't criticize your apathetic teenager, which you're kind of, right? Don't judge her or him. And accept it as part of your being. And that's really all we're really doing. Acknowledging what comes up, allowing it to be there, and accepting it as part of who we are. So when whoever comes to knock, and yeah, the apathetic teenager probably might mess up the house, right? Have a party, throw some furniture around, right? That's okay. Acknowledge, allow, accept. That's the key mantra. That whatever comes up in your practice, you're not rejecting the apathetic teenager. You're not pushing him or her down, and you're not engaging him in a discussion or her. I would say that's the best advice. I wonder if it's good advice for actually raising children. Acknowledge, allow, accept. Okay.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Yeah, sure.
How does that play into reminding yourself of your intention and your motivation?
Of your intention and your motivation?
For sitting down. You know how sometimes that's useful?
I'm not, so acknowledge, allow, accept in your intention?
Well, no. So if you have an apathetic teenager.
Yeah.
Or doubt or something that comes up.
Yeah.
I think I've read that you can recall your intention or your motivation for why you're sitting down in the first place.
Oh, okay. I think I know. I think I know what you're talking about. So in the kind of preliminaries, where
right,
you before so you even sit down and start practicing?
Right. I was under the impression that you could recall the motivation that you came up with.
Oh, yeah, if you get some real resistance.
But
yeah.
That would be like yeah. Giving the teenager a suggestion.
No, absolutely. I thought this person was talking about like sitting, they're sitting in meditation, they're there. And yeah, that's good though, but because I think what you're talking about is you have to answer the question for yourself, why are you doing what you're doing? What is your big goal? Have that clear in your mind. Because when the resistance, whether it comes in the form of an apathetic teenager or some other procrastinating phase, if you tap into that big goal that you have, and that goal is up to you. No one can tell you what that goal is. That goal can be enlightenment. That goal can be, I just want to have a little more peace at work. That goal could be, I just want to meet I want to meet people. I don't know why that would be a weird goal, to meet people sitting in meditation. But whatever, my point is that the goal, you need to tap into that goal, because when that teenager is pushing, be like, well, we have this big goal, so maybe you could.
So maybe you're telling that. So do you engage the teenager and say, no,
acknowledge, allow, accept.
But you do sure. Remind the other
part, the other parts of you, okay. That this is why we're doing this. Yeah.
That kind of reminds me of how you would deal with like a purification if like something arose, right? Because it has its like small perspective purview and like it's behaving in the way that seems best suited according to its like small perspective sub-mind experience. And when it comes up, it's doing what it thinks is best for everybody. But then you get to say like, oh, I have this broader perspective. I understand why you're feeling that way. You know, according to your small world, but there's a bigger one out here, and you know, and dialoguing like that, or not dialoguing, but
yeah, I just be careful about the dialogue. No dialogue. I mean, you can
beam it to it.
Beam it, yeah, beam it. It's like, but if it's a purification, then especially acknowledge, allow, accept. Don't do anything.
Right.
Don't engage it. Don't reject it. Let it come up.
And allowing, or like acknowledging, like you're acknowledging
yeah.
The source, or like
yeah.
Where the energy's like. Like that, but not like that. Just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's almost like a delegation, maybe. Like you just send it off to that agency of your mind and say, you know, you deal with that subordinate that's freaking out.
Like a military.
I mean, it's like that. Like you've got some area of a committee, it's that model. You say, you deal with your committee. You know, stop throwing this junk up in the consciousness. Just take care of it. And it does. It can.
Yeah.
But,
I guess.
In a friendly way. It could be firm. I mean,
that's firm and friendly. Yeah, absolutely.
The puppy analogy is a good one too. Like your puppy's fine. You're firm with your puppy. You're good with it. You're friendly with it. But at the same time, you're not peeing in the house. You know.
That's right. Yeah.
But we're gonna fix that. You know.
Yeah, I like it. You're peeing in the house. You're like, what would it? So.
There's a thread there somewhere.
Yeah. No, I get it. I guess I want to emphasize is that you don't have to do anything. You just have to observe. It will take care of itself. I mean, that's the bottom line, whatever it is. It's purification. If it's an angry teenager, the more you can observe what's happening, the more non-reactive, the less you reject it, the less you engage it. And just let it move through you. Imagine it's a storm. A storm system's blowing through the internal landscape of your mind. And here it comes, and the thunder clouds are building. What are you going to do? Get out of here, right? No, you get an umbrella, right? But let the storm come through. You don't have to do anything. You just have to watch it. I mean, that's the advice I've gotten. Nothing to do except... Now, that's not easy. That's not easy. It's really not easy. Because something comes up in our mind and we either want to push it away or we want to engage it. We want to fix it. Right? So this is like a really radical acceptance. And I often think about, you know, if I could just learn this one thing, and I think about cycles of thought, which I'm sure they just keep coming up, keep coming, and the hell of that, the hell of repetitive thoughts just keep coming up, like a cycle. And if I had the ability just to not engage it and not reject it, and just know it's this thing that needs to work itself out. And just be the passive observer. Right? And then the storm goes. So, but use any skills you have, you know. You're going to have to, you know, this is just some advice. Which brings us to the next question, which is an interesting question related to this. I've attended group meditations where people have been quite silent. In our group, there seems to be a lot of coming late, coughing, sneezing, throat clearing, yawning, rustling papers, and fidgeting. Am I being overly fussy to hope for a more silent, sacred environment? I was recently reading, this quote reminds me, Jean-Paul Sartre, the great existentialist philosopher, and he has a saying, he says, "Hell is other people." I was like, I would never invite you over to a cocktail party. You know, Jean-Paul Sartre, you know, he must be the big drag to hang out with. But it's, hell is other people. This is, you know. I was once on a Vipassana retreat with someone, actually some of you might know, Will Duncan. He's a very close friend since childhood. And we went on one of these 10-day Goenka retreats, a few of them. And this is one particular. And the guy behind him, I don't know if you know Goenka retreats, you sit for an hour. I mean, this might be boot camp, but that's boot camp, right?
Yeah.
If you've been on one, you're like, there four, you're up at four, you're, and it's great, I love it, but it's intense. He was sitting, and the guy behind him, and my friend Will is a drummer, and the guy behind him, on his cushion, it wasn't like just a beat. It was like really complex triplets and rhythms. And this went the second day. He goes up to the teacher and he says, "This is going on nonstop. It's not like once in a while. It's like this nervous habit, right?" And the teacher looks at him and says, "That's your practice." After 3 days, 4 days, it stopped. But when it stopped, what he noticed is the guy to the left of him had very long fingernails. And what he would do is he'd click them Very specific way. And it would make all day long, the whole retreat. This is your practice. So, you know, I wouldn't go that far saying this is your practice, but one thing I would say is I have found that when people make noise, it's actually helpful, especially with extrospective awareness. Have you ever gone to a cafe to work? And for some reason, you can really just focus in on that cafe, but there's all this noise going on around you because your extrospective awareness is being stimulated. You're alert, you're completely focused, and you can use those sounds to your advantage. So I think it's that you can shift your perspective, whoever has this issue, and I understand it, to use those. Because if you notice when there's rustling, you really have this moment to check in with what's going on in your mind. Was your extrospective awareness open? It even really orients you, because when there's a lot of silence and a lot of quiet, that extrospective awareness can collapse and you can slip into dullness. So in a way, all that coughing, sneezing, and rustling, I really like it. And I only liked it because I learned it from Chuladasa. Like, you need to keep this aware. You need to keep this alert. Because that always reminds me, oh, I'm in a meditation hall. I'm supposed to be meditating. I'm supposed to be focusing on my breath. So in a sense, it's a gift. And then the last thing I would say is it's a wonderful opportunity for you to work with aversion and ill will, one of the fundamental hindrances of meditation. And we have another mantra. With all things averse, let it come, let it be, and let it go. Let it come, let that aversion come. Let it be there, let it hang out. Again, don't reject it. Don't reject it. Don't get into like, oh, that person really got it. And then when it's ready, it'll go. That old aversion will go. So we now have two mantras. Acknowledge, allow, accept. Let it come, let it be, let it go. These are beautiful sayings in all of life to carry with you.
Yeah.
Was there a comment?
I was going to say, it's when we're meditating together.
Yes, right. We'll work out all of our aversion.
I just wanted to say that one of Jean Paul Sartre's books was No Exit, so maybe he should have studied Buddhism.
Yeah.
Remember that title? No Exit.
And this is a similar one. Could you please talk about dealing with gross mental distractions, i.e. anger, agitation? Acknowledge, allow, accept, let it come, let it be, let it go. Disidentify from it. Don't say, I'm angry. Anger is arising. Irritation is arising. Pain is arising. Let it just come up in peripheral awareness. Don't, it's not your pain. There's no self in the pain. There's no self in the agitation. It's just a feeling. And after the fact, we paste on, I am feeling angry. So the first step is always to disidentify to the best of your ability and recognize truly what that emotion, thought, agitation, anger is. It's simply a firing of the internal climate. That's it. It's not you. And let it come up and let it dissipate. Not easy. I know it's not easy. I know it's not easy. But if you can master that, I think about that. If I could master that ability, then I could teach that to other people. Acknowledge, allow, accept, let it come, let it be, let it go. What a gift. Because you think about people who don't have the skills to deal with their mental afflictions and the anger and the agitation and the aggravation, and it's all about I'm mad and I'm angry and I'm pissed off and I'm sad. And they have no skills. Why not hit the bottle? You know, get me out of my hell. But if I have this tool that I can cultivate, oh, what an incredible gift! What an incredible gift! And I think a lot of meditation is developing that gift, being the observer of our inner world. So. Can you explain how one meditates with the eyes open? Are they focused, unfocused? Do you recommend a particular way if you are trying to deal with dullness? Oh, okay. You know, I did a little Zen stuff, I don't generally meditate with my eyes open. Sometimes they automatically just start to open. I don't know if you've ever experienced that. They just kind of start to, and that's fine. But in general, I think that if the head is unfocused is fine. You can focus in on something. But I tend to just unfocus and just let my gaze rest comfortably downward. Yeah, that's really in terms of just keeping your eyes open. In terms of dullness, you know, do the same thing. Remember, if you're opening your eyes for dullness, it's got to be subtle dullness. That opening of the eyes, if it's strong dullness, it may not work so well. But really, open your eyes. Like, yeah, you can try that, you know. Like, you know, whatever works. Did you ever see that movie, Whatever Works? Yeah, you should. It's a great movie. All right. I'm going to try to get through these. Can you talk in more detail about how to get an intention and how to get an intention and how that differs from doing and diligence? Is it as simple as saying, I intend to focus my attention on the breath at the nose? If so, why does it feel so lame when that intention does not yield its intended results? Right? You're like, okay, I'm going to intend to follow the breath the entire sit. One breath and you're like mind wandering. It's a great question. And it is that simple. But it's about holding intention as well. Because remember, the mind is a collection. It's a system. There's so many intentions coursing through you. There's so many minds that all have their own intentions. So it's about setting the intention, but you have to refresh the intention. You have to hold the intention. And because if you don't, these other intentions, these other objects of consciousness are going to float to the surface and they have stronger intentions connected to them and they're going to become the moments of consciousness. I want to just say really quickly that this language that's seeping through, some of you are familiar with and some of you aren't, that Chula Dasa is creating, as Phil said today, a language. It's a system. But I wanted to give you a sense that that system comes from both Buddhism. It comes from the Abhidharma. It comes from the Lankavatara Sutra. It comes from Buddhist sutras, the foundational sutras. It also comes from the Kamala Shila's nine stages and the Sangha. But it also has a cognitive neuroscience. He's trained as a physiologist in neurophysiology and neuroanatomy. He's pulled that into it. He's also taken the theory of emergence, if any of you are familiar with emergence. He's also drawn from other philosophies of consciousness, and he's put them all in like a martini shaker, shook them up, and made this incredible, incredible model, which is so deep and so rich, and we're just really getting to the surface of it. And it comes from years of profound meditative insight as well. So he's not just a master at building a model. He's saying, this model is working because my experience has said that this is really helpful. So when we're talking about mind systems and like all these kinds of multiple intentions, it does have its root in these different Buddhist traditions and intellectual traditions, and it comes from the Buddhist sutras and science, cognitive science and neuroscience. I think that's important because a lot of the language is like spinning around a lot. And all of this will be spelled out in the book, which will come soon. So set your intention. Always keep your intention, hold your intention. And there's one little technique that I like to do, and it's kind of fun, and it's a really in-close following. And you set your intention right before the beginning of the in-breath to catch the beginning of the in-breath. And as soon as you're on the beginning of the in-breath, set your intention to catch the middle of the in-breath. And when you hit the middle of the in-breath, set your intention to catch the end of the in-breath. And when you're at the pause at the top, set your intention to catch the beginning of the out-breath. And when you're at the beginning of the out-breath, set your intention to catch the beginning of the middle, and then set, I know it seems impossible, but it's a super fun little exercise of intention setting. And that might give this person a sense of
kind of holding and you're affirming intention.
In the same breath?
Yeah, in one breath cycle. And don't. And what's going to happen is your awareness is going to collapse, so you don't want to do that. And you don't want to do this intensity for too long. But just to play with that as a way to really focus in and bring that intention and see how that works. Okay. Thank you all. It's been an honor. And I really appreciate your patience and your time. And if you benefited from anything I said, I honestly mean this. From the bottom of my heart, I owe everything to this being that's sitting here. And anything you didn't like was me. So thank you. Enjoy the rest of your retreat. Really, this is a special time, and you're all special people. There's very few people on this earth who would spend 8 days or 9 days sitting in total silence. Very few people. Yeah. Working with their minds.